You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
A public education means just that. It means education for the public and that's controlled by the public. Not education that's controlled by and run by private foundations and wealthy individuals.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. On this edition of PT Radio, we speak with two teachers about the current public education crisis taking place within the Oakland Unified School District. The district has faced crisis since June 2003, when the state of California took over the school district and imposed an administrator. The administrator, Randolph Ward, created ways to quote-unquote stop the bleeding deficit. His methods have further bankrupted public education in Oakland. With the power of the state, Ward has cut jobs, spent millions on administrative offices, and given thousands to private, non-public organizations. This crisis is no accident and is taking place across the country. Math teacher at Castlemont High School in Oakland's impoverished flatlands, Jack Gerson, is the school's site rep and communications chair for the Oakland Education Association. They're the teachers' union. He starts us off by describing a national attack on public education.
The attack on public education is coming largely in the inner city school districts all across the country because we hear about what's happening in New York, in Chicago, in Baltimore, in Los Angeles, Seattle, San Diego, Dallas. We can go through every major city. And there's something that's tying it together, which is that you have large foundations run by extremely wealthy individuals, billionaires, some of the wealthiest people in the world, who have taken up overhauling public education as their main cause. I'm thinking particularly of Eli Broad and Bill Gates. Broad is the second largest realtor in the state of California, the CEO of Kaufman and Broad Realty. He's also the CEO of AIG Retirement, and people may be reading about AIG. It's in the news now for all kinds of corrupt activities, and some of those are going on in AIG Retirement, maybe about the 30th wealthiest person in the world. His plan is to overhaul the school districts from the top. He says that these are massive businesses, and the way to change a massive urban school districts is by starting at the top, not the bottom. And so he has a superintendent's academy in which he's training the leadership of nearly all of the large urban school districts. Randolph Ward, the state administrator, came right out of Broad's superintendent's academy.
High school biology and physics teacher Stephen Miller has taught for 21 years in Oakland and currently teaches in Life Academy. He also is an Oakland Education Association rep at his school. He provides us some background information about who Randolph Ward is and how the state took over the Oakland Unified School District.
When Oakland was assessed as being $60 million over its budget, there's a California state law which allows the state to take over school districts which are quote-unquote bankrupt in this sense. Interestingly enough, the school districts that they take over are all poor, heavily minority school districts. And so they've taken over five or six by now. What we mean is that anybody in Oakland, in the Oakland public schools, no longer has the power to make decisions about what happens. So that power is invested, in our case, in the state administrator. They didn't have to write the law to take away our civil rights, but they did it. And now that we're living through this, we see, for example, that various plans are being implemented which sound good at one level to turn the authority over to the schools, but in actuality what this means is that they have changed the historic way that schools are funded. Schools used to be funded based on how many people are actually enrolled in the school, and your average daily attendance, or ADA, is based on that. Ward made a subtle change in this, saying that the funding will be based on how many people are at school on a given day, so that funding is now based on actual attendance rather than who's on the enrollment. But what, in fact, this does is that for the heavily minority schools in Oakland, the attendance is always worse. There's gang problems. People are moving. You have a highly transient population. People hold their kids out to help translate. You always have lower population in those schools. So this is going to set those schools up for an ever-decreasing budget while the richer schools, which in Oakland are in the hills, will always maintain a high attendance rate, and consequently their budget won't be decreased. And furthermore, these are schools which hold a yearly pancake breakfast and raise $100,000 and pay for librarians and things like this. So under receivership, we face a true dictatorship. One of the first things that Randolph Ward did was to eliminate $47,000, to pay for high school newspapers, because he felt that this was an unworthy expense, since we have to save money is the mantra that we're supposed to believe here. Then he turns around and spends $1 million for a new system to track students that we didn't need. So we're facing these sort of irrational kind of things. There's no explanation. He doesn't owe anybody an explanation. He doesn't have to make an explanation.
Jack Gerson.
Okay, what Ward represents, first of all, Eli Broad, and more broadly, he represents a plan by capitalism, by the ruling class of this country, to wreck public education, to take back the gains that people have fought for and won over decades. Over the past century, workers in this country have won the right for their children to get a decent education, and minorities in this country have won the right, you know, black people, Latinos have won the right for their students to start entering. Education certainly isn't equal, but it's a lot more than it had been 50 years ago. And that's all being rolled back now. These opportunities are being taken away, just as capitalism is trying to take away other gains, Social Security, health care. Public education means just that. It means education for the public and that's controlled by the public, not education that's controlled by and run by private foundations and wealthy individuals. If we have real public education, that money will be controlled by the public. It won't be funneled through private institutions which say, we'll give you money provided that you, and only if you, implement our plans. Instead, those plans will be made by the people themselves. That can't happen when the money is coming from foundations which put strings attached to it. They're wrecking public education in that way. Also, they're giving much less than what's being taken away. You have huge cuts in funding in education on a real basis, and a small amount relatively is funneled back. When it's funneled back, one, they get big press about public relations about what philanthropists there are. Two, they get tax breaks, and three, they get control. If they're really interested in giving money to education, then institutionalize it, right? Let's raise corporate taxes.
Jack Gerson now shares with us a little history on how public education has reached its present crisis.
I think we should put this in context of what's happened to education in California and then come back to this. California used to be one of the top, if not the top, states in education prior to 1978. In 1978, the voters of the state passed Proposition 13, which was pushed very heavily by right-wing real estate interests from Southern California, Jarvis and Lloyd Butcher. And Prop 13 put a virtual freeze on property taxes, which was the main source of funding for education. Since that time, we've had a decline, gradual first picking up steam, where class sizes increased, salary for teachers have dropped relative to other states, to the point now where in many areas, including Oakland, wages have been frozen or even cut over the past several years. Resources, textbooks, materials, schools have all declined. Janitorial services, clerical services, there's no money available from the prior source. And rather than campaign for new sources of funding or to restore the old sources, too many people in education, of course the school administrations and districts, but also the leadership of the teachers union, the California Teachers Association, have limited themselves tremendously. And therefore, we've gotten into a funding crisis. Now, the fact that more money could do things for education, could attract better teachers, retain teachers, provide more material for students, decrease class size, give teachers more preparation time, well, that was seen a few years ago when the school district actually did provide more resources and education improved by any measure, suddenly the state found we were $60 million or some figure, which has varied anywhere from $30 million to $100 million, because they don't really know. And this was used as an excuse to bring in the state receivership, bring in Ward, and institute the changes that are being instituted throughout the rest of the country. And you have to ask, was this really done because of a concern that Oakland wasn't managing its money, or rather was it done to bring Oakland in line with the national plans to destroy public education? Because the funds could be available. And let me just point where funds are being taken by this state administrator, Randolph Ward. Steve mentioned that the district was $60 million in debt. Ward just announced at the last school board meeting only 4 days ago that he is going to spend over $50 million to overhaul the central administration. Not schools, not money for teachers or kids, but to overhaul the bureaucracy, more than $50 million. That money, he says, he'll get from Broad and Gates Foundations. Money from the Broad and Gates Foundations always come at the cost of their control. It's not in the interest of students. It's not in the interest of teachers. It means cutting teachers. It means larger class size. It means less resources. That's the overall plan. And there's an overall plan to deprive the overwhelming majority of inner city kids of their civil rights for decent education. Instead, you'll have a small number that will go to certain types of schools we set up as model schools, where the overwhelming majority will be in schools that will resemble Charles Dickens, Dickens-esque type novel schools, where there'll be huge holding pens.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. We're speaking with high school teachers Jack Gerson and Stephen Miller about the present crisis of public education. Control of public educational institutions in the U.S. are drastically shifting. The result is education controlled by corporations and wealthy individuals, mainly through private charter schools and always at the expense of communities. Stephen Miller goes on to describe privatization and charter schools. He even describes the scenario of a Walmart charter school in Oakland.
What Ward is doing is he's closing schools right and left. He's closing or transforming some 30 schools in this district just this year, and many of them will become charter schools. Most people believe that charter schools are like startups by visionary teachers and concerned parents who want the best for their kids. And there are some charter schools like this. But the ones who are being invited into Oakland are corporate charter schools. These are run by corporations. So we actually face, as a result of this receivership, the absolute absurdity of Walmart running a elementary school here in Oakland. A Walmart financed charter school corporation is taking over Whittier Elementary School, and they actually state that they are going to use textbooks written by Walmart for their school. I mean, this is an absurdity, and all of this is done without any public discussion, any public vote whatsoever. Even the fact that we find out about it is just accidental in most cases, or due to a lot of very persistent research. But these things are hidden from the people. We're talking about massive and profound changes in what public education means. And it's just being engineered from behind the scenes. Nobody can comment on it. It's no longer put to the people of Oakland to make a decision about it. And this is really what privatization offers, right? Privatization means it's private. The corporations don't tell you that they're putting cancer-causing chemicals in cosmetics. They just defend their right to do so. But they never actually tell you what they're going to do. The whole issue of accountability, which ironically everybody rants and raves how the public schools need to be accountable, but corporations aren't accountable and charter schools are not legally held to the same accountability at all. The other thing that's very important here is that this really fuels the drumbeat of No Child Left Behind, because one of the things that we've discovered is that No Child Left Behind is very craftily aimed only at poor schools. It only has the effect on schools that receive Title I funding, which is to somehow counter the effects of poverty. Well, those schools are not suburban schools in the main. They are not more well-off schools within an urban school district, but the major urban schools and also the rural schools depend heavily on Title I, so they're the ones who are forced to dance to the tune of closing the schools, which is what No Child Left Behind offers. And ironically, charter schools are not covered by Title I either. They get equal money too, so that they are equally subsidized for the Title I money that the school next door that's a public school may get. But those schools don't have to respond to No Child Left Behind at all.
Jack Gerson.
Let's be clear. Charter schools fall outside of No Child Left Behind. The provisions don't apply to them. By partitioning schools into charter schools and non-charter schools, they're making it clear the school districts can get rid of those schools that they want to. And in fact, that's the whole point behind No Child Left Behind, I think, is that any school in the country that they want to target and reorganize, they can do so. No Child Left Behind provisions say that by the year 2007, 70% of all students in schools covered by No Child Left Behind must be at or above grade level in math or reading. And by 2014, 100% of all students must. Now, these targets, the first one is unrealistic and the second one is silly. The reason that the year 2014 was chosen is because George Bush will be out of office for 5 years by then. The whole No Child Left Behind will probably even be forgotten. It will have been used to wreck education, and then they'll move on and do something else. It gives them the basis to institute a tyranny of standardized tests rather than really teaching people. Every teaching gets based around these tests, which only teach one aspect of students' intelligence. Even worse, it gives the opportunity to single out and isolate individual schools, say you failed, you didn't. Palo Alto, where Stanford University is, which is a wealthy community, has schools failing some of the No Child Left Behind provisions. But surprise, they're getting a pass. They're not going to be reorganized. The inner city schools in Oakland are all being reorganized. So I think that that's an indication of how it's being used.
A wave of privatization is taking place across the country. Both state and federal governments are intentionally being bankrupted. As the barrier to public goods and services is being destroyed, new private markets are being created. Stephen Miller.
Just the corporate amount of revenue that they deal with for public schools is $1 trillion. This is a trillion-dollar market, and it's growing rapidly. So there's a lot of money there. If we step back and we look at what American people expect, they really only think that they're entitled to two services from the government. One is Social Security, and the other entitlement is a free public education. But obviously, both of these two entitlements are under severe attack. Privatization is on the march in this country. If we step back and we look at what was going on with children when public schools were first proposed, the life of a child was that they would start to go to work about 6 years old. The first opposition to child labor was promoting the idea that children should be educated. So we're going to a situation where gradually the possibility of education is going to be eliminated. And so what's going to happen to the children? Well, I can tell you because the children that I teach already have to do it. They go to work. They go to work legally and illegally. They work at janitorial systems at nighttime and then come to school and sleep during the daytime. There's all kinds of things that children are forced into doing, but because their families are needy, they have to consider the kids working. What we see then historically is that the development of public education was the major blow to child labor in this country and led to a whole series of laws to protect children. And now we're seeing that the withdrawal of public education means that the laws to protect children are also being withdrawn, and they're going to be forced back into extremely onerous labor conditions. We're already seeing this happen across the country. The only thing that's unique about Oakland is that it's happening faster here because we're hostage to the state of California. But everybody's going to see this happening everywhere.
Jack Gerson makes clear who should not control education in the U.S. and describes some of the goals of the Oakland Education Association.
When we talk about what public education should be, we don't mean that it should be the kind of education that's been run by these central bureaucracies. That's not what we're for, and we, teachers and students, are being blamed for what's been done by the politicians who run the country, who have acted as the agents of the same rich people who are now coming in directly to try to overhaul schools. They've been running it through these central bureaucracies and through the superintendents and so on, that they've used their money to influence elections and put in power. We're talking about, and in fact, the OEA has adopted a draft program, a vision for what education should be, the need for smaller class size, cutting classes in half. Studies after studies shows that you need less than 15-to-1 ratio of students to teachers in order to really be effective. We have more than double that. We're talking about having all the resources that students need to learn and teachers need to teach available. We go in the opposite direction. About having clean, safe schools in a situation where across the country, and certainly here, we have massive numbers of janitors and custodians laid off, so the schools are filthy messes. We need new school buildings. We need to have control by the people who are involved in education directly, by the teachers, parents, students, other school workers, need to themselves be able to control what goes on at their sites and district-wide in education. None of this is happening. Now, it's not the fault of my students that the school district is $60 million in debt, yet my students are being punished every day for this. What did they do to deserve this? It's not the fault of the students in my school that my school is not good at being a profit center or a grant raiser, and other schools are better at getting money from private charities. So my students are suffering in outmoded, dilapidated facilities, unsanitary, and facing health risks and safety and violence risks and in overcrowded facilities every day. It's not their fault. They don't deserve this. But we're in now a dog-eat-dog, typical kind of capitalist situation where every school is supposed to compete against every school for a pie that isn't big enough to go around to all. So you know that most are going to lose on that circumstance. That's not the way that things should be.
Stephen Miller.
The whole onslaught of privatization is aimed at destroying, at least in public schools, a very real set of values that every American believes in. From the first day a kid comes to school, they're taught play fair, share. If you break it, clean it up. Everybody gets to play. Now, if you apply this to what's going on in this country or to the world that corporations want, none of that could possibly be done. They don't want to share. They certainly don't want everybody to play. They don't intend to clean it up. And you see, they're actually attacking the moral root of the opposition, which is in the publicly controlled schools. Democracy is impossible without publicly controlled schools because the ideas of democracy have got to be taught. Democracy's messy. It's good that it's messy. It should be messy. And they're attacking the very root values of America with this corporate takeover. And people have to think about, do you want to live in a world that's as shriveled and narrow as what these corporations tell you? Or do you want to live in a world where people really get to decide their own fate and become real 360-degree developed human beings?
Our future, the future of our children, the future of the planet are being sold out and being destroyed. Our health, our retirement, and the education and future jobs of our children are all being sold down the river. And for what? They're being sold down the river for narrow profits, for greed on the part of corporations, rather than looking at the overall interest of the overwhelming majority. And if this short-sightedness continues, we won't have air to breathe, leave aside decent schools to attend or decent jobs or any type of productive society. And this is something that we have to reverse. We can't let this happen because it will destroy civilization.
This is People's Tribune Radio. We're speaking with Oakland, California school teachers Stephen Miller and Jack Gerson. They share with us what they would do differently to fulfill their vision for better education.
Well, first of all, every child can and should be educated to absolutely their full capacity. Nobody should be paying for this. This is in society's benefit to have educated children. These are the people who are going to build the future. It's really not rational to say that only a few deserve to be educated and only those few are going to be the rich. For the cost of the war in Iraq, which is $1.5 billion a week, we could create the most beautiful and wonderful educational system, way surpassing what the world has ever seen. True education for a lifetime, learners forever, and not just children, but run it all the way through adults. But the question, of course, is where does the money? Firstly, I just want to point out what private profits really mean, because profit is a category of money that exists after all the raw materials and all your expenses are taken care of, right? Out of all the revenue you receive, you set aside stuff to replace what you've spent. And then private profit is on top of that. And when we say getting corporate money, we're saying that these corporations really don't have the right to benefit and make a profit off of human misery and the exploitation of our community without kicking some of that back. In fact, in my opinion, they should kick all of that back. And that money in this country is privatized. It means it's seized and removed from the public. It's no longer available to the public in any way, shape, or form. That's what private means. And so we need to expand what public means. We're out here to really defend the public in public education. We are actually in perhaps the greatest wave of privatization the world has ever seen, because now with electronic technology, these corporations are privatizing human bloodlines, they're privatizing cells, they're privatizing species, they're privatizing our water, they're privatizing our ability to get health care. All of this means that they are aggressively expanding the sphere of what private is. Well, to counter that, we need to aggressively expand the sphere of what public is and finance it with public money.
Education needs to be paid for by society as a whole. It's a basic right. On a national level, we see billions, hundreds of billions of dollars going to so-called defense, that is into military aggression, and that money ought to be used for social purposes.
Up next, we have a short commentary connecting the public education crisis in Oakland with the massive privatization campaign taking place in New Orleans. Stephen Miller wrote this commentary, and it's read by DJ Calambre, who hosts a show called Sonidos de la Tierra on Chaos Community Radio in Olympia, Washington. That's www.kaosradio.org.
We're 5-0, known for brutalizing black males. Government jobs include heroin and crack sales, recovering slaves. Still, we try to stack mail, hustle intuition even more. Hustle that bell, putting pistols up, no more swinging.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the government, corporations, and the city's elite moved quickly to begin to rebuild the city on a model of gentrification and privatization. In November, the state of Louisiana took over New Orleans' 117 public schools. The school system reopened for the new semester in January. 15 schools open, 12 are charters. Charter schools evoke the image of plucky little schools started by visionary parents and teachers. In fact, most are run by corporations which claim they can do a better job than public schools. While they divert public funds for profits, as private entities, charters are not held to public accountability for their budgets and which students get accepted. They do not have to have credentialed teachers, and they are exempt from many of the requirements of No Child Left Behind. In California, it is estimated that by fall 2007, 2,000 public schools will be privatized, since charter schools can claim schools which are designated as failing. Oakland, California is New Orleans' sister city. During World War II, thousands of families from Louisiana migrated to Oakland to work in the shipyards. The state of California took over the city's public schools in 2003. Since then, the state superintendent, Randolph Ward, has been dismantling the city's public schools and privatizing them step by step. What's going on in Oakland provides a preview of what will follow in New Orleans schools and from there to other urban centers. In New Orleans, the privatizers are talking about shifting power to individual schools, providing parents with freedom of choice, and other so-called market reforms. Oakland shows what they really mean.
That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. That number once again is 1-800-691-6888. Or visit us on the web at www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.